Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Beers with Engineers podcast, where we have a pint of fun and a shot of geek. My name is Bert Ushold, and this is episode number 14. Today, my guest is Robert, and the title is You Can't Drill Holes from the Inside Out. You'll find out why I don't give his last name as soon as the podcast starts, and why I chose that title a little later on. The last episode was groundbreaking, in that I had my first female guest. Yay! This week is groundbreaking, in that I have my first international guest. Robert is from Canada. For what it's worth, I am from Massachusetts, where I help companies develop medical devices. I suggest you go to my website, dexterityeng.com, to learn more about me and to download an alt code card. If you don't know what that is, believe me, you will appreciate it, and tape it to your computer monitor and use it frequently. That's it. Let's pop one open and get started. All right, hello world. This podcast is going to start a little different than usual. My guest today is Robert. How are you today?
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
All right, awesome. And listeners, you don't have to be that sharp to notice that I didn't give you his last name. So it's not the case where he's so famous that he's only known by his first name. You probably saw his last name when you downloaded the podcast and probably recognize it as a likely difficult to pronounce Polish name. What you don't know also is that I just met Robert through LinkedIn a couple of weeks ago and we exchanged a few messages, and 10 minutes ago is the first time seen him, talked to him. We've really interacted on a more normal basis. So, with that said, I don't even know how to pronounce his name yet. However, since I have some Polish cousins, and I grew up in Buffalo, went to school in Detroit, where there's a good number of Polish people, I'm feeling a little cocky that I think I can pronounce his name accurately without any outside assistance. All right, so here's my effort. Take two. My guest today is Robert Krapanowicz. How was that? Is that close?
It's close, but not there yet.
Not there yet. All right. All right. I'm gonna say uncle and ask for the proper pronunciation.
So if we want to anglicize it, then it's going to be Krapanowicz.
Okay.
Or if you want to be truly with a Polish pronunciation, it's Krapanowicz.
Ah, okay. I guess it's not terribly surprising that the anglicized pronunciation is a bit different than the pure, true Polish pronunciation.
True.
So, Krapanowicz, was it? That's the same thing I said
that
before.
That is correct. Krapanowicz.
Pin instead of...
It's
a softer I. Krapanowicz as opposed to Krapanowicz. All right, very good. Very good. All right. One other bit of information about Robert. He's my first guest from outside of the United States. He lives outside of London, but not in England. He lives in Ontario. Although to some Americans, London, Kentucky, where I've also been to, might be considered a foreign country. So what it's worth, I've been to all three Londons. London, England, London, Ontario, and London, Kentucky. All right, so that useless bit of information out of the way. Let's get to the first question of the day. Since it's 9 in the morning, you're likely not actually having a beer on this Beers with Engineers podcast, but if you were drinking a beer, say it was 5 o'clock, what beer would you like to be drinking?
To be honest, I'm not an alcohol consumer.
Okay, fair enough.
I would probably stick with an iced tea or lemonade.
Iced tea or lemonade. All right, sounds good. Sounds good. So, since we're talking to somebody in Canada and we're sort of talking about beer, there's a trivia piece about the Toronto Blue Jays, who is owned by Labatt's, the brewer. And my understanding is that they named them the Blue Jays in hopes that they would be called, or their, you know, nickname would be the Blues. I think they're sort of called the Jays, or maybe the Blue Jays, because Labatt's, if you don't know, they're one of their main beers is Labatt's Blue.
And that is correct.
Did not work out.
We actually have a facility here in London. That's where Labatt's is being actually brewed.
Is it? Okay. Sounds good. Sounds good. All right. I guess one other little thing. So I saw on your LinkedIn post you went to University of Western Ontario. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. Believe it or not, I've actually been there. Back in college, we had a track meet. I was in school in Detroit. Whatever reason, we did a track meet at in London and the University of Western Ontario. And as I mentioned, grew up in Buffalo, went to school in Detroit. Drove through London many, many times, and very often stopped at the McDonald's. I forget which exit it is. I want to say it's like 232 or 234, just comes to mind that there's a McDonald's there. And one time a friend from school was with me, and he had worked at a McDonald's in high school, like many people do. And he was just very tickled by the logo that they had, the little maple leaf at the base of the M in the McDonald's logo. They still have that, do you know?
Yeah, we actually not far from where I live. The very first McDonald's that opened up in Canada, and the big M arch is still strongly standing with the Canadian maple leaf right in the center of it.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's a nice touch. You keep the McDonald's logo, but you add the little Canadian maple leaf to let you know that you're in Canada instead of the US. I don't know if they do that anywhere else, but that's what Canada has. So very good. All right. With the beginning formalities, whatever, technicalities, details out of the way, I would like to start with kind of your background. What engineering do you do? And maybe more before that, how did you decide to be an engineer sometime back in your early
Well,
days?
I've majored in mechanical, although engineering was not my primary career choice, or if I can say it, vocational dedication.
Okay.
My initial desire to actually do something good in the world was actually to enter religious life.
Interesting. All right.
So had the opportunity to be in a religious order for 3 years. Decided that I guess there's not much that would kind of crank my bolts. So decided to go into mechanical engineering after that.
All right, excuse me for one second. Did you say crack your boats?
Bolts.
Oh, bolts. Nuts and bolts. Okay.
Correct.
I was missing the L. All
So I
right, very
decided to
good.
go into
Okay.
mechanical engineering after there, right? So a little bit of a different shift in career backslash vocation. And to be quite frank, I don't regret it.
Okay. That's good. I don't like to go through life with regrets. Have you exercised that vocation in a different way? Maybe, I don't know, work with the youth or something like that?
I have volunteered in London with youth that lives on the streets.
Oh, that's excellent.
Pretty interesting experience, pretty awakening experience.
I would imagine.
And I would say that would be the extent. Am I involved, with my faith? Yes, I am. I'm not very involved within the church, but do practice my faith. So that's about it, I would say.
Okay, well, again, since we don't really know each other yet, I will add that I started as an engineer and have been an engineer, I don't know, 30, pushing 40 years now, I guess. But 2 years ago, I started studying to become a deacon in the Catholic Church. So I have that engineering job and I'm working on a more religious vocation as well. And one of my recent guests, I'm actually editing the podcast right now. I asked him the question, "What would you be if you weren't an engineer?" And he said, "I think I might like to be a pastor of some sort." So there you have
Sounds
it.
like a great career.
Okay. So what made you think that instead of being in a religious life, mechanical engineering was a thing that you would like to do?
Well, when I decided to pursue the other avenue, I remember I sat with my father, and I said, I don't know what I want to do in life. He is retired now. He used to be a production employee, so a blue worker, I guess, blue-collar worker. And he says, well, why don't you go into quality? They don't do much. They just sit in nice air-conditioned office. Give it a try. And I thought to myself, okay, so I've applied to engineering. First year is more of a general trying to figure out what you want to do in your life with hopes that you will come up with something. And what really scared me off was that I would have to wear safety shoes every day. And I said, how on earth before I'm going to actually go into quality control? So I decided to go into mechanical, started to enjoy more of design. Yes, I've always had a knack for mechanical repairs when I was in my teens. So fixing cars at the age of, 13, 14 and up was something normal to me. And then, got more involved into mechanical design, more of understanding of the principles, and thought that I'm going to graduate, change humanity or change the world. Unfortunately, it went the opposite way. The world changed me. But I'm still wearing safety shoes, getting my hands dirty. It's all good.
Yep. Okay. That sounds good. Sounds good. So one thing I'll ask you to explain, because it doesn't make any sense. The company you're working for now, what's the name again? It was
Hydradyne Technologies, or how we commonly refer as Hydradyne Tech.
Hydradyne Tech, okay. And so I was doing a little homework, and was surprised. So there's an office in outside London, Ontario, but then it seems most of the other branches are in the southern U.S. That seems a little strange. Do you know anything how that came about? That's kind of...
So there's actually two different Hydradynes. One is in U.S. One is in Canada, where I work, in Ingersoll.
Okay.
But we're not the same company.
Okay.
It's kind of interesting. We do get their orders. They get our orders. So we're trying to be very friendly to each other and say, hey, we've got your orders, here's the order, and the other way around.
Okay, all right. Google sometimes doesn't know those fine nuances. So when I searched Hydradyne Technology, they sort of kind of lumped the two of you together.
Yeah, no, but different companies.
A funny story about that, my brother-in-law owns a company called Oster Manufacturing.
Hmm.
And they make pipe threading equipment, and they have nothing to do with what most people are familiar with, maybe familiar with Oster blenders, toasters, things like that. And so two interesting things about that. So one time, they sent them a letter, a little bit nasty gram, saying, we don't like the fact that you're Oster Manufacturing, you're going to have to stop using that name. And he replied very politely, well, we've been doing that, had that name since 1926, and I see you started using it in 1930. I'm happy to let you keep using it, if that's all right with you. And then the other story was I think it was a woman, her toaster blender, some appliance stopped working, and she wrote a letter, to my brother-in-law's company, and my nephew, who was working for him, still works for him, very nicely replied, I'm sorry, we are not that Oster Manufacturing. Here's the phone number and address for the other company. Wish you best of luck. Instead of just tossing that letter in the garbage can, he said, we'll help this poor lady out. She'll be really upset at Oster if she sends a letter and they don't reply at all, so...
That's actually very noble. That's very nice of them that they were able to just send a letter. That's not us. Go with somebody else.
Right.
Very nice.
Yeah. All right. Very good. So what was your first job? I'm guessing you said you started in quality. You actually work in quality, or you tried it out very shortly and moved on to something else?
So my very first job actually was with Parker Hannifin.
Okay.
In hydraulics, I was up north, northern Ontario, how I always refer, out in the boonies.
Right.
winter, you would be isolated from the rest of the country because of the amount of snow that we were getting at that time.
Okay.
I spent there a year learning about hydraulics, designing cylinders, among, you know, other products that Parker was actually manufacturing in Owen Sound facility. And my profile on LinkedIn obviously does not show all the places where I worked, but my background definitely spreads out quite vastly from hydraulics to automation, from automation to filtration, from filtration to plumbing goods, from plumbing goods to military as a civilian, and going back to hydraulics.
Okay.
Where I started from, right?
Yeah, that's good. Now, does your Hydrodyne, as opposed to the one in the U.S., is your customers mostly within Canada, or do you have exports to the U.S.?
So our customer base, mainly, I would say our largest customer is located in Canada, not far away from our facility.
Okay.
The forestry business. But our product actually ends up either in U.S., or it's going to go to New Zealand, those areas of the globe.
Okay. I've been to New Zealand. Absolutely awesome. Gorgeous, gorgeous place. I would love to get back there again sometime.
I would like to have the opportunity to go there myself. I heard it's beautiful.
Yep. So just convince your boss sometime that there's a delivery you have to make in person. And it's a very important customer. You got to take it there.
We're working on a project for one of our customers in New Zealand.
All right.
Maybe I'll have the opportunity to go and see.
All right.
But I guess we'll see how that's going to go.
Yep. All right. Good luck. Good luck. Best of all that to you. All right. So what got us connected on LinkedIn? I think it was, I kind of feel sorry for the guy. Somebody from SolidWorks posted a question. And, you know, I think it was just sort of this little fun thing. It showed a picture of, I think, like a bearing bracket, if you may or not recall. And the question was, how many sketches does it take to make this particular part? And I think, you have been the first one to respond. And I think you kind of raked this guy over the coals a little bit. You kind of went in a different direction and said, well, why would you want to do that? That's just not the right way to do it. Which I agree with you. I mean, the answer was you can do it in one sketch. And lots of people said, yeah, but why would you? And, you know, so the conversation on doing CAD and stuff like that. And whatever it was you said, I thought I agreed with you, but potentially there was an interpretation that I would not agree with. And then somebody responded that, so you were talking about the CAD modeling and the design intent within the tree. And this other person replied, said, oh yeah, you gotta have, it's gotta make sense, because when, you know, the machinist or whatever gets it, he wants to be able to see what you did. And I'm going, half the CAD I send out, it's like a step file, so I have no idea how I did my SolidWorks. But anyways, it turned out we agreed on that the design, you have to design the part right. You have to design it for the particular process.
Yeah, it was a pretty interesting post when I saw it. And like you said, yourself, Bert, you know, how many sketches do you require to make this part? And I was a little bit, I'm not going to say surprised, but baffled by how, I'm going to say, aggressive people were with their answers, in the sense of one sketch, three sketches, two sketches. But everybody missed the point to truly what you're trying to convey. I believe in, you know, that's what I believe in. It's not how you design the part. And within SolidWorks, meaning, you know, trying to sprint through the design. It's you actually, how do you design it so anybody can understand what it's supposed to be, its function, its purpose. But the most fundamental thing is how the heck this part is going to be made.
Right.
And that's what I'm finding with a lot of new designers, engineers, depends how you want to classify the individuals.
Right.
They will make parts that, you know, they're wonderful in the virtual side of things. But unfortunately, I always say you can't drill holes from inside out. You can only drill holes from outside in.
Yep.
And if you cannot follow the process of manufacturing, no matter how wonderful your design is, it's only going to be as good as the, you know, the paper that is actually printed on or the screen that you're displaying on. Otherwise, it's completely useless.
Right.
So to me, it's quite evident that today's workforce is lacking a lot of that, and really cannot put my finger on it, but why that's the case. But I also think a lot of it is, you know, I'm Mr. Engineer, I'm Mr. Designer. It's none of my business how it's going to get made. This is what I want. So I think that's where that major disconnect is. And I don't think it's going to help us in the long run unless we understand what manufacturing is all about. Because manufacturing has its own challenges too. And whatever engineers design or designers come up with, it has to be feasible at the end of the day to make it.
Right, right.
Yeah, it. So, as far as the cause for that, why it's not there, you know, one perspective, you know, one could throw the blame on us, you know, the more senior engineers. You know, there's some responsibility slash obligation to, you know, help the newer engineers come up and, you know, learn the ropes. But then the second half of your answer, and correct me if I'm wrong, seemed to indicate that some engineers weren't interested in learning that stuff. Is that a correct assessment?
Yeah, that would be fair. And I see that on a daily basis myself, especially in the recruitment side when I have to find people for my department.
Okay.
It's kind of interesting what you see on the resume, and once you start to get to know the individual, especially at Hydradyne, the way I conduct interviews, candidate submits their candidacy or resume to us, we go over it, we invite the candidate for an interview, you kind of get a feeling for their experience, talk about that a little bit more, and if they pass that stage, then the candidate goes to a second round, which is what I call whiteboard challenge.
Okay.
And the whiteboard challenge, essentially what it is, it's, okay, this is what you said you've done in your experiences. Well, let's work some out engineering problems. So we'll put up engineering problems on the board and let's go at it. I'm not looking for the right answers, you know, 2 + 2 = 5. I'm not looking for that. I'm thinking more on the lines of how can you analyze the problem and how are you going to go about it?
Okay.
And 8 out of 10 fail.
Really?
So it's pretty scary, but I think that's a pretty good rude awakening for everybody to understand what field you're in and what are the expectations.
Yep.
It takes time, but yeah, I think there's that major disconnect there.
That is surprising and a bit saddening. Let me understand a little better. These are entry-level positions. What types of positions are you referring to and talking about that you're hiring?
If we're talking about entry positions, obviously, yes, there is that whiteboard challenge as well, just to see how the candidate thinks,
okay,
if they can analyze the problem and what's their approach. But it's more on a lighter note. If we're going into more of a senior role, then obviously that is being elevated. So there's a little bit of a different expectations there. Yes, there's how we say, we try to find out if the hamster is spinning. And if it does, it's good.
I like that phrase.
And if the person can, you know, give us or give me answers, they're more than welcome to at the end of the day. But the questions are a little bit more on a difficult side of things versus a junior guy.
Okay.
Or a junior person, I should rather say.
Okay.
Now, it, I guess not being able to do something is one critique you can make of a person. Not being interested in learning or saying it doesn't matter is a different critique of a person. I remember early in my career, the idea of concurrent engineering was kind of new, and I think that's largely continued. And I just remember, you know, like, yeah, well, actually, when you design it, you got to talk to the manufacturing guy so you can make sure that you can manufacture it.
That is correct.
And that was presented as a new thing, and I think I said this exact thing earlier podcast. My reaction to reading that was sort of like, duh? Is it that, you know, what's the point of making something, you know, on paper at the time, in CAD now, that can't be made physically? You know, it seemed like sort of, it seemed obvious, and maybe it's obvious in retrospect, I don't know. But the... what you're saying of people thinking it doesn't matter, maybe not doesn't matter, but it doesn't apply to them, that's somebody else's job, that's a little, know, a little saddening, I guess, disheartening.
It is very sad. It is very sad. At Hydrodyne, what's kind of unique is that we do have a lot of open channel communication, I would say, where we can actually talk to manufacturing, and they will say, like, what are you guys thinking?
Right.
This is completely out of whack, right?
Yeah, I've gotten that once or twice.
Nice. Which is really nice, right?
Yeah.
But like I said, I always say to anybody who is kind of applying for a job or just want to get, you know, some sort of a piece of advice, I said, you know, your design does not matter to the millwright, to the lathe operator, to the CNC operator. All they do is look at the drawing, look at initials. Oh my God, we're going to have a lot of issues with this, or this is going to be smooth, right?
Yep.
At the end of the day, your design, your initials, and whatever you put on those prints, it's your business card. That's how I look at it, right?
I agree 100%. Yeah. The business, I'm sorry, the drawing, that's my, it's in a sense, that's my finished product. And you know, if I'm putting my name on it, I want to make sure that it's done well. You know, is it going to be perfect? Well, no, but we'll try to get close. And you know, my nightmare would be for, you know, a print to go to the floor and someone to see my initials and shake their head. That that would make me quite upset.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, right? And like I said, is engineers, designers do not feel comfortable in getting out on the shop floor asking the feedback. I think they're doing more damage to their own career than anything else, right? Because those guys that are on the production side, on the manufacturing side, they have an abundance of knowledge.
Right.
And they can actually guide, you know, senior engineers or junior engineers, how we can make things better in a sense of, you know, from the manufacturing side of things. Everybody's input is quite valuable, and I would say it's very essential.
Yep.
Right? So that's how I always say, get out of your cocoon, you know, lift your bum off the seat, go onto the floor, talk to the people. Not only that, you're going to build respect with them because you value their opinion, but at the same time, you're going to learn how to collaborate.
Right.
Through that collaboration, there's a lot of great things that can come out of it.
Yep, no, I agree 100%. My guy was a co-op, and then my first job out of college was with Procter & Gamble. And the division I was in was kind of a support division. And, you know, we had a group of three or four engineers, but we also had a group of, you know, pipe fitters, welders, electricians, stuff like that, you know, kind of maintaining things in the building and that stuff. And, you know, I had to work closely with those guys. And, you know, I came out of college, actually was still in college when I was a co-op, and, yeah, how much was the training? How much was just me? I knew I didn't know diddly, and it's like, talk to these guys, learn from them. And my third co-op session, I think, was my favorite because it was somewhat the pipe fitters and electricians, but actually there was a machine shop that was, part of our services that we provided to the other parts of the company was a machine shop. And, my boss, he had me spend, I don't know, 3 or 4 days, working with all the different guys in there, working on the mill, not working on the mill, but learning the guys on the mill, doing some sheet metal, doing some welding. And it was just great experience, great experience. And, like I said, I'm designing things and I didn't know how to do things, so I know this thing's got to get made, so I'm gonna have to ask the guy who's gonna make it. Here's what I want to do. What do I have to do? Sort of like, tell me what to tell you. I'm, let's work
Exactly.
together on this thing. I don't know what I'm supposed to tell you. What should I tell you to make this particular part?
You know what, Bert, at the end of the day, the way I see it is don't be too pride of, too proud. Put your pride in your pocket. Go to the people and see what it is, right? But a lot of engineers, and I'm not trying to mug Western, but Western has a very, I would say, strange reputation when it comes to engineers, that all engineers that come out of Western are very ignorant because they're so proud, I'm an engineer. But it all boils down to who you truly are, right? Who you truly are. And admit, you don't know everything. You don't, because I don't know everything myself. Like I said, 2 + 2 = 5, right?
So I probably shouldn't say that I have a t-shirt that says, I'm an engineer. To save time, just assume that I'm always right.
That is true.
All
That is
right,
true.
so there's some truth to it, but it's mostly a funny t-shirt, and I don't think I'm, well, some people might say I'm that way sometimes, and I guess I am sometimes, but
I don't find ourselves, I mean, I don't find engineers boring. I don't. You just have to understand our humor. That's all it is.
exactly. Now I'm gonna, you said humor and it reminded me that I forgot something at our start off, so maybe we'll do it in the middle. Do you have an engineering joke you can share with us?
There's quite a few of them, and one that really kind of sticks to me. Actually, we were talking about that yesterday at the dinner table. Then we were kind of, okay, how we're gonna break this. So one of the jokes that kind of came up was, what did the force say to the distance?
I'm sorry, what did.
What did the force say to the distance?
Oh, yes.
We're having a moment, right?
We're having a moment. Nice.
So that was a pretty good laugh at the table during dinner. So yeah, that kind of stuck with me. So it's like, okay, I think I will use that line.
That's good. That's good. All right, so our little intermission for our daily engineering joke. I will add one of my favorite books, and I still go to it periodically. When I was a couple years out of college, another engineer who's had some years on the experience recommended. It is called Product Design for Manufacturing. I'm looking over at my bookshelf. I think Robert Bralla, I think, is the author. And it's a freaking awesome book. I mean, it's 30 years old now, but it goes through just about every manufacturing process you can think of, and probably a handful that you can't think of. And just gives a brief description of the process, what are its capabilities as far as tolerances, and what are some do's and don'ts when designing for it. And I remember in college, kind of recommended, you got to get Mark's Handbook for Mechanical Engineers. And I bought it and thought it was almost useless. But this book is just freaking awesome. So I'll put it in the notes for folks, in case they want to go get a copy of it. I mean, and I think, a lot of that is available on the internet these days, but as I've said to a few people, the internet is turned into sort of a search engine. It's an ad server, and
Pretty much.
trying to find the information you want, especially of a technical nature,
you know, how's the best way to design a part for sheet metal? It's you kind of work pretty hard to find it on the internet, and if you got a book that's just an arm's length away, that could be very quite useful to people.
It's very tough. It's very tough. You know, talking about books, one of the books that I read many years back, I would say, when I was still in my infant stages of my career. I've been in engineering now 24 years myself, and I was working for a company that does chillers for nuclear reactors.
Okay.
And there was a lot of commotion on the manufacturing side or production side of things. And we actually, I remember they hired a new, I think it was a general manager that they hired. He did not have the best approach with people. So he definitely had a nickname among the other colleagues, but I had a very great relationship with him. And he actually slipped me a book, Theory of Constraints. I'm not sure if you heard of it, by Goldratt. And it just talks about bottlenecks. It talks about manufacturing, logistics, but a lot of that can be translated into engineering as well. You know, what is the bottleneck in engineering? So to what you just said, searching things online can be very dangerous. There's a lot of opinions, but truly to find a proper publication is very hard.
Okay.
Hence why, you know, the bookshelf behind me is full of manufacturing books, engineering books. Plus, I've got my own library at work. I'm a strong proponent that those are valuable resources. Everything has its own place, you know, going electronic or virtual has its own place. But I'm still kind of the old fashioned way guy. I keep my notes in my own little, in my books.
Yep.
Actually, a notebook lasts me about 6 months. So there's definitely a library of that. But I still have to feed it. You know, I've got a book, I can read it, not virtually. It just makes it different. It just makes it different. And okay. Once you have the book, you know you have the right resource, right?
Yep. What was the name of that book again?
Theory of Constraints.
Ah, okay. That's right. And
by Goldratt.
Goldratt, yep. Have you read his other one, The Goal?
Yes, I have.
Okay. I've never read Theory of Constraints. I've read The Goal a couple times. Oh, yeah. Tremendous book, and I've recommended it on this podcast before, and I'll recommend it again, and we'll throw Theory of Constraints in there too.
It's very dry, so if you want to fall asleep, I would not be recommending that book. maybe it would be a good book to read, but it's a very good book. It opens up your views on different aspects of what business is all about.
Yep.
You know, how things are tied together.
Yep.
Excellent book.
Okay. The other area I wanted to get into with you is designers, draftsmen, engineers. You know, you mentioned some of those in this conversation. I've mentioned it in some of your posts there. And I'd just like to get, I'll give a little background of my experience and just get to your opinion. You know, I've been mostly in medical design and a lot of small design firms, and the idea of a, you know, a draftsman, designer, engineer hierarchy doesn't really seem to exist anymore. My second job out of college was with Ethicon Endosurgery, and I was an engineer there, and we had designers who were kind of CAD operators, kind of designers. And, you know, none of them were degreed engineers, but, you know, that was who I worked with. You know, I wasn't really too much on a, you know, CAD tube. And now it seems that's evolved, at least in my experience. I'd like to hear what your experience is. As an engineer, I'm kind of doing the design work, the engineering work, making drawings, and I'm not sure it's always the most efficient use of my experience and skills to be doing drawings, you know. This is one project I'm working on. Next week, I'm going to be spending time working on drawings, and these are some gnarly, complicated drawings. I'm going to spend some time on them. And, you know, I think at that one job, you know, I was the engineer, and, you know, I do paper sketches and figure out what things are going to do, do some testing, do some analysis, work in the lab. And I had a, you know, mechanical designer slash CAD operator working with me. And, you know, we start out the day, you know, here's what we're going to do, what did you do yesterday? And, you know, if there's some particular details we need to talk about, we talk about them. And, you know, periodically through the day, he'd call up and say, hey, I'm not sure what we're going to do here, this is complicated, let's go figure it out. And we'd go sit down and, you know, how can we figure that out? And so, I don't know, I've rambled. Just your thoughts on, you know, in your experience, do you still have, you know, mechanical designers working for engineers, or maybe just elaborate on that if you would, please.
So I think I still remember when I graduated, and that was the turn of year 2000 when okay. I've graduated. So I still remember doing drafting, not when I knew I was already in the workforce on boards. They taught us, when I was still studying engineering, they taught us how to draft on boards. But that was more just to kind of, I would say, probably to get the appreciation of what it used to be like. And now we're moving into more of a futuristic approach where we have the 3D CAD capabilities. So back then, I still remember we had drafters. I never had the opportunity to meet. You had engineer, you had mechanical designer, and then you had a drafter. So there was never a three-tier okay. system. I've always seen you had your drafter, you had your engineer. Engineer would do sketches on a piece of paper, and the drafter would kind of relay that over onto the CAD system. Then they would sit down together and they would collaborate to make things kind of fit. But I think overall that talent now on the drafting side is pretty much gone. Not only because of much better 3D software packages. I've worked with Pro Engineer, Wildfire back then. Now it's what it's called Creo. Worked with Solid Edge. SolidWorks is the main software package that we use. I honestly, myself, for quite some time now, I'm not using SolidWorks as extensively as, let's say, a mechanical designer would, but I'm still pretty good in it. But the talent of drafting is completely gone because the CAD does the prints for you based on what you want the CAD to execute, let's say, as views, cross-section views, however you want to deem. So that talent is gone because of the software allowing you to manipulate things. People don't even think what the views are actually trying to show.
Right.
So you're completely isolated from that level of communication. But what I'm finding is a lot of designers now are still drafters, although they call themselves designers. So there's a very important aspect to them in the whole manufacturing, relaying the information to the shop floor. They're very important. But the way I call some of the designers right now, I would probably say, and I don't want to feel anybody bad, but to me that's more of a glorified drafter that is capable of doing things in 3D space and then transferring that over to a 2D drawing.
So let me for a second, excuse me. Explain, if you would, what you see the difference between a drafter and a designer.
A drafter to me is more of a person that will put somebody else's design on paper. And they might not have the capabilities of creating something that is new, something that was never done. Whereas a designer in most cases is very diverse and creating things, right? So they always got something in their mind. How am I going to do this? What can we do? How can we improve it? Whereas to me, a drafter is basically what you designed. Okay, give that to me. I'm going to put it on a piece of paper, and then we'll push it out to manufacturing. They can make it. So there's that little bit of difference, being able to think outside of the box, making things work on the design side of things. Whereas the drafter is more, okay, whatever you came up with, I'll put it on the page, right, for others to make it for you.
So that what, and then what would then the difference be? What would an engineer, how is an engineer different from the designer?
Well, engineer and designer, I would say a good engineer has capabilities of all three. That's how I see it.
Okay.
You're able to not only relay the message on a 2D drawing, you're able to come up with crazy or novel ideas, but at the same time, you have enough knowledge that you can actually see if there's going to be any failures, let's say, or fatigue aspects to your design. So you're able to analyze it much better because you have the backbone how to analyze the product that you're designing. I had one of engineers that was designing one of the components, and it was actually a threaded connection. And the individual zoomed in. I remember I was walking through the office. I was, you know, just kind of stopped by the person's desk. I said, hey, you know, how are things are going? He says, okay. So I said, okay, what are you doing? So he kind of told me what it was. I said, okay, do you think this design will work? You know, if you're going to start torquing. And he says, well, yeah, it's going to work. Look how, you know, how big that is. I said, well, fine. But you zoomed in on it, you know, 50 times to what actually what the part looks like in real life. I think you need to really evaluate what you're doing. Let's do some calculations, and then you'll see this will not work.
Right.
Even though I have not done calculations, but from experience, you just talk about the size, how much torque you want to apply. I said, before you even put this into some sort of use in assembly, this thing is going to just fall apart, right? So I think that's where engineers come, you know, have that importance when it comes to the design, because they can look at things a little bit differently.
Yep.
Yes, it sounds, the design is cool, but will it actually hold, right? Last thing you want to do, have, you know, designers just design a plane and hope for the best that you're going to get from Chicago to Florida.
Hopefully so the doors don't fall off.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, right? So you definitely don't want to have a parachute with you as your carry-on, right? Just in case.
Parachute is carry-on. That's good. Now, a couple of guys I've worked with, and I've had them as guests on this in the past, they both said that they consider themselves to be design engineers. And I, you know, me and these two other guys, I find us largely interchangeable. We work in the same places, done the same things. And I guess I think that fits, that we would be considered design engineers. And, you know, just a little bit looking at your background, it seems like you're doing more, you know, I'll call it hardcore engineering, more analysis, more calculations, you know, with the fluids and the bolts and the torque. And, you know, I'm doing some of that here or there, but a large chunk of it is, you know, conceptual. How are these things going to work together? And usually we're not pushing the envelope that much that is this going to break for the most part. You know, I'll be buying cylinders and valves from Parker and the like, where I will, depending on other mechanical engineers who've worked all that out, then okay, I'm going to plug this into my system. So not that one's better or worse, just different.
Right.
So
that's the right point of it. It's to what you just said, Bert. Yeah, I've done all the roles. Before starting at Hydrodyne, I was at another company that actually does wet wire filters for filtration systems, right?
Okay.
be coal mining, could be primary settlement tanks in your municipal stations. And one of the tasks I was asked to was actually design from the ground up, brand new machine.
Oh,
so you do the design, you do the drafting, you do the analysis. But analysis, for me, is the key. It's the key there, right? That's for me, that's what I consider the most important. And the rest of it, again, consultation with manufacturing, operators, you take that into consideration, and that's where your designer's thinking has to kick in to accommodate what they're asking for, right?
Yep.
All right, so we've gone quite a bit. We've gotten a little bit geeky on this particular episode. What are some things that you do for fun when you're not analyzing and building stuff and wishing that your boss sends you to New Zealand?
Well, as engineers, I guess the consensus are that engineers don't have any fun.
Oh, yeah. It's not true, though. It's not true.
I guess it all depends on the mood. I really enjoy working with my hands, so working in the yard.
Okay.
Constructing, I don't know, sheds or decks. Working on my car is another thing. But I also enjoy actually being on a computer. And I'm not a game guy. That was never my thing. But doing different things on a computer maybe ties into engineering as well. I find that kind of enjoyable. That's my kind of moment where I can, you know, completely forget about everything else and enjoy myself, right? Movies, not as much anymore. I guess I'm coming of an age where you kind of sit in front of a TV. 7 minutes later, you're ready for sleep. So
guilty as charged.
That's right.
Yeah, fall asleep in front of the TV once or twice. What's a movie that you like from way back?
Sorry, can you repeat that question? I apologize.
What is a movie that you like from, I'll say years ago, not an older movie, maybe not a newer movie?
So I've got two movies that I can watch over and over and over again. One is The Pianist.
I've heard of that. Right? I've not seen it.
And the other one is Not Without My Daughter.
Oh, what's that one about?
Sorry?
What is that one about?
So that one is about an American getting married to a Middle Eastern doctor. And this is kind of in the 70s. And the doctor moves back with the family. I mean, supposed to go for a visit back to Iran. And there he decides that they're not going to go back. And there's the oppression and how she actually, Betty McMoody, is trying to escape from Iran back home to America. It's a pretty interesting movie. It's based on true facts.
Yeah.
I know that there were a lot of backlash when the movie came out. But I think what, you know, the movie is trying to show, I don't think it's more of a, you know, we're going to put the culture down. It's the way I took it for myself. It was persistence. How persistent can you be in your approaches to reach your ultimate goal?
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And, you know, she's going through different situations where she cannot leave the home. She wants to go to the embassy to come back to U.S. Then she meets somebody else who helps her out. So, again, persistence, you know, being goal-driven in order to achieve the success that you want to achieve, right?
Yep.
And Pianist was the same thing, exactly the same thing. What do I do to survive the war, right? And you're going to meet the good people, you're going to meet the bad people, right? It does not matter. You should never lose respect towards either of the people. So be yourself, you know, treat them with utmost respect, regardless if they're true to you or they're not. It's all about your dignity and your ultimate goal, how you want to go about it to achieve what you want to achieve in life.
Now, I think The Pianist, wasn't that awards, or maybe that's some Oscar nominations, if my memory is correct? Does that sound right?
There was Oscar nominations, that is
okay.
Correct. Polanski, right? Polanski directed that movie.
Okay. All right.
it is about time to wrap up, so we will get our, call it the grab bag question. So number from 1 to 10, I got a bunch of questions. You pick a number, I will give you that question. Could be just about anything.
Well, my lucky number is 7, so I'm going to go with 7. Hopefully this will give you good luck.
All right, number 7. What is a favorite, maybe not necessarily the favorite, but what is a favorite birthday memory or birthday gift?
Legos.
Legos.
Legos. 100%. Okay. When I was a kid, I always wanted Legos, and I remember my parents bought me a Lego set, and obviously they tried to hide that away from me, but it was close to my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew there is something in the house, so I definitely went on a scavenger hunt.
Okay.
I found the set. And the only thing that sucked about it, because I was so eager to open it, that I did open it.
Do you remember how old you were?
I think I was at that time 8.
8, okay.
8, and it was like, so I played with it, then I tried to put it back together into the box, and obviously you can't put it back in the same order as it came out.
That's right.
Right, so I take the box out, and it's like, okay, I didn't say nothing to my parents, and they tried to gift, and they already opened it, so I guess there's no more gifts for you.
Yeah, oh, that's funny, yeah. That's funny. Now, I, for whatever reason, I never was one to look for gifts, but I do know I accidentally found one year. I think Mom just had it on her dresser under a bunch of things, and you know, we used to go into Mom and Dad's bedroom looking for stuff quite regularly, and that was, you know, accepted practice. And one time I was looking to pick up the stuff, and I see this car, I think it was like SSP or something like that. It was a car, you stuck a long string in, and you just pull it, and that would spin it up, and you drop it, and it would go. And
oh, so it's the winding thing. Yeah,
it was okay. A wind-up, yeah. You know, not a crank wind-up, but it had a...
pull the string, and it goes...
Pull the string sort of thing, yeah. You know, a little...
Rack and pinion
sort of thing. All right, that's good. Legos, very engineering, good answer. I have 3 teenage boys who still... enjoy playing with Legos. We got a table just full of them out on our porch. So, awesome. This has been a good time. I will give you the last word, last question, last comment. The floor is yours.
I guess last comment for me, what it would be, engineers might be thought that we're very boring. We're not boring. We're just unique individuals with unique sense of humor. But for any new engineers, my biggest thing, what I say to them, make sure you have a passion for what you're trying to do and dive into that passion, as that will benefit you at the end. And hopefully you're going to come up with some sort of phenomenal ideas which will aid humanity in a very positive manner.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. That's a good last word. Robert, been a pleasure to actually meet you and get to know you a little bit better.
And, same with you, Brad.
All right, very good. Have a good day.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye. That wraps up today's episode of the Beers with Engineers podcast. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. Please remember to like, subscribe, give a rating, and most importantly, tell your friends, whether they are an engineer or not. I'm happy to have them listen. Any comments and suggestions are welcomed and encouraged. If you would like to be a guest on the podcast or know somebody that you think might be a good guest on the podcast, please let us know that too. Until next time, this is Bert saying goodbye.